Hi, this is Leonard Lopate. You're listening to WNYC On Demand. Podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Salman Rushdie writes that the human being is the only creature on Earth that tells itself stories in order to understand what sort of creature it is. There are 20 opportunities for that kind of enlightenment in this year's edition of the Best American Short Stories, which Salman Rushdie guest edited, and it brought the Booker Prize-winning author back to our show this past fall. Here it is again for you on New Year's Day. I asked him, does he write his own stories as a way of understanding himself?
Well, or my relationship with the world, yeah. I mean, I think not all stories are as inward-looking as that, but I do think that they begin as a way of, or I begin as trying to find out where what interests me intersects with what's going on in the world, you know, and try and put the story on the intersection point.
And does it matter whether it's something that takes place in today's world, as some of your works have, or whether it takes place sometime in the distant past?
No, because, I mean, stories, really, they take place on the page, you know what I mean? And what you want to see is if they're alive there. You know, and I mean, I was very interested in doing this exercise because, I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do it was just to see what was out there, you know, to get a sort of spectrum.
Well, do you have fondness for the short story form? Because you've written 10 novels and only one collection of short stories.
I know. I keep using up all my short story material in the novels. That's the trouble. But I do. Now, I would like to write more, and I do admire it. And I mean, a lot of the great American story writers, you know, have been friends of mine. I mean, Raymond Carver was a good friend, and people like Richard Ford and so on. So I mean, I admire it, even though I haven't done enough of it.
Well, you say you use up your short stories in your novels. A novel allows you to be digressive.
Mm-hmm.
Short story is a much more concentrated thing.
Yeah.
But I remember reading a section from your last novel in The New Yorker, which was published as a short story. Were you comfortable with that? Do you think that that's a real short story?
No, it's what The New Yorker does. The New Yorker never tells you it's an extract from a novel. They're too grand to do that. They always pretend that it stands alone. And, I mean, there is a kind of unease about that. But, I mean, they're also very, very good at shaping a bit from your book, so it does feel like it stands alone.
And so that wasn't just a chapter, a standalone chapter?
It wasn't exactly. It was two bits sort of stitched together.
Well, Dickens used to write in serialized form. That's another way of doing the same thing. Could that ever be brought back? I know there were attempts in California. There were a couple of serial books, but
I suppose that's
too much pressure for a writer.
It's one of the things the internet might make possible. You know, that just being able to post stuff every so often. I mean, I think it may be one of the forms that could be revived. You know, in that electronic medium. But the reason it happened then was because that's how people read. You know, they went out and bought a chapter the way we go out and buy a magazine.
So when you were looking through all the short stories, I know how this process works because we've talked with other people in the past. Mm-hmm. Somebody culls through a lot of short stories and then sends you still a large amount.
Yeah.
Did you have some idea of what you think a short story should be as you were picking and choosing?
No, I mean, it's true to say, and one should acknowledge that Heidi Pitlor, who's the permanent editor of the series, is the one who does the real work. I mean, she really tries to read more or less everything that's published in from The New Yorker to very obscure little magazines. And I get sent, I mean, probably 1% or 2 or 3% of what she's read. So an enormous amount of the editorial intelligence is hers. And I had to basically whittle down about 120, 130 stories to 20.
A number of these stories are the first things that these writers have published. And generally, writers start off with short stories before they attempt the novel form.
Well, I think we've got a spectrum here. On the one hand, you've got, you know, acknowledged masters of the short story like Alice Munro or Tobias Wolff.
We have Jonathan Lethem as well.
Yeah. So, and on the other, we did have this one young woman, Katie Chase, who's wrote this extraordinary little story about a kind of marriage in a religious cult. And I discovered that it was her first published story, which, I mean, so clearly when we told her that she was in the book, I think she almost died.
Well, it could probably help make a career. And you told me that some of these magazines, some of the smaller magazines that are holding on by a thread, feel that having a story included in a collection like this may save them.
I think, well, one or two of them actually did say to us that they felt we had really helped the magazine. And I think it's this particular anthology, you know, because it has such a long pedigree and it's been around for whatever it is, you know, a couple of decades, and it's been edited by all kinds of very eminent people. And, you know, it's very, very prestigious, both for the writers. I mean, I was very struck by how happy the writers were to be in it. And I think for magazines, too, it has a great prestige connotation.
Since you're not an American, how did you end up with this job? Or have you become an American somewhere?
Well, I'm at least a New Yorker, I think. You know? I mean, I think, no, I'm not an American. It was very nice of them. They asked me, and I thought that I felt I at least had the legitimacy of having spent long enough here.
Well, one of the writers here is Pakistani. Alice Munro is Canadian. Mm. We're being very loose when we talk about American.
Well,
anyway.
there are actually loose but definite guidelines. I mean, about where stories have to be published at a certain period of time, and the writers either have to be, well, they have to be North American, which allows Canadians in, but also the rules allow in writers who've had a long connection with the United States.
Do you think that if you were publishing, if you were doing a collection like this in Britain, where you lived for many years, that it would feel very different, or are good short stories just good short stories?
I don't know. It was interesting to see what the particular preoccupations were, which I think might be different in England. I mean, I was struck by how, for instance, there was a real theme about stories about religion. I mean, Tobias Wolff's story is a particularly good example of that, but there were several others.
And you said a lot of stories with golf.
Golf. That was the mystery to me. I mean, you know, I didn't find a single story about baseball or football or basketball or hockey, but I found like six or seven stories about golf.
Well, Tiger Woods has so much time on his hands these days since he's recovering. Well, yeah, do you have any idea of why?
It beats me. I mean, you know, I don't want to conclude that the story is a really terribly middle-class form, because it's not. I mean, one of the stories almost made it. I mean, but one of the golf stories didn't finally make it. And the story I probably saddest to have left out was actually the one who came closest to making it, was David Foster Wallace's story. And I think in the light of the terrible tragedy.
Well, you didn't know he was going to kill himself.
No, I didn't. But I would have, in retrospect, I would have liked to be able to honor him in that way. It was literally the 21st story.
You say old-fashioned naturalism was the dominant manner this year. So have postmodernist styles run their course, or is it just what you were seeing?
I mean, I felt that it was an oddly small-scale, domestic, naturalistic year predominantly. But, I mean, there were some very interestingly sort of wilder imaginations at work. I mean, I'm an enormous admirer of Stephen Milhauser, who I think is really one of the great American writers. And he had two stories that I would happily have had both of them in, you know, but we had to choose.
That's another problem. There are writers who are better than other writers, and they write number. I mean, I could see doing a whole best American short stories with Alice Munro,
exactly,
and not bothering with anybody else.
Exactly, or T.C. Boyle, or et cetera. So there were those difficulties. I thought this young woman, Karen Russell, who actually in the year before me, when Stephen King was editing it, he had chosen one of her crazy tales of St. Lucy's Home for Girls Reared by Wolves. And I found that she had the second story, which I loved, called Vampires in the Lemon Grove, which I picked for this one. So I think she is at the kind of more antic, wild end of the fiction spectrum.
When Stephen King was here last year to talk about that collection, he told me that he thinks most stories aren't written for a readership, but for an audience of editors and teachers. You think he was right?
I just don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I think clearly there's a lot of creative writing going on. And that was the thing that I was most trying to avoid, that creative writing ease.
Well, you said that you saw widespread examples of humorless, bloodless competence. And I have noted that probably more of the fiction that I see today is written well than ever in the history
That's
of the
true.
World. But less of it is really great.
Exactly. Because people go to these craft courses. And craft is the one thing you can teach. You know, you actually can teach people how to improve their sentences and paragraphs and architecture and so on. And what you can't teach them are the things that really make literature into a great art. You can't teach them the eye. You know, you can't teach them what to see. You can't teach them the ear, you know, what to hear. And you can't teach them how to have a vision of the world that's interesting. And you can't teach them how to have an interesting relationship with language. You know, those are things which you either have or you don't have. And that's what makes stories good.
My guest is Salman Rushdie, who is the guest editor of the Best American Short Stories series this year, the Best American Short Stories of 2008. The series that is edited by Heidi Pittler and published by Houghton Mifflin. You write that the freedom to tell each other the stories of ourselves, to retell the stories of our culture and beliefs, is profoundly connected to the larger subject of freedom itself. Excuse me, but hasn't some pretty great literature been produced by writers who are living in repressive societies?
Yeah. I mean, in fact, you know, there's a wonderful phrase in one of Italo Calvino's books where he says that you can tell I'm going to slightly misquote this, you can tell how much a given society values literature by the size of the apparatus it sets up to repress it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by that standard, the Soviet Union obviously valued literature a great deal and the United States not so much. So, it's true, I think, that literature has... Unless you're in Alaska, where, of course, they can see Russia, and therefore everything is better. but I do think that stories often are, as you say, are told against power. You know, some of the great stories come out of repressive regimes.
And they also require the writer sometimes to be more subtle because he has to assume that his readers are more sophisticated because they have to read between the lines.
They have to pick up on codes. And that happens in other forms too, like in the movies now in repressive countries. But I thought one of the stories that really stood out for me here was the story by a young East European writer, Miroslav Penkov, a story called Buying Lenin. It's kind of insane idea of this kid who's escaped from the Soviet bloc and discovers somebody's tried to sell Lenin on eBay. but what's lovely about the story is his relationship, very touchy relationship with his old communist grandfather, and that tale of two generations pulling in opposite directions, you know, the diehard communist and the very much would-be American grandson. I thought it was completely beautiful the way it was done.
You mentioned in your introduction that editing this book introduced you to a number of fiction magazines you hadn't heard of before. Mm. I thought that writers knew every possible publication that's out there.
Well, I mean, I guess I've just been spoiled, you know. I mean, it used to be the case that I could not be published in The New Yorker. I mean, when the legendary Mr. Sean was the editor.
Yeah, he had certain rules.
Yeah, he had all kinds of rules, and I broke them all.
You may have written I too many times.
Yes,
something.
I did. And he didn't like stories about illness, things like that. So I somehow
never... Sorry, he thought it might have been vulgar.
I never got in. And actually... It's in my early life as a writer, I was excluded from the august halls of The New Yorker. And actually, it was only when Bob Gottlieb took over the editorship that I was finally allowed in. But since then, fortunately, I have been fortunate. I've had The New Yorker as a kind of home.
Yeah, and that's obviously the most prestigious publication right now because it's the one that... people think of when they think of short stories, but there are all these worthy journals, many of them dying, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was really happy.
And it's hard to get short story collections published these days unless you're really famous.
Very difficult. All of that. I mean, I do feel that the entire form, which is, you know, everyone knows, is one of the great American forms. And it is, as you say, hanging by a thread. I mean, this is, if you look at the history of American literature, the short story is absolutely at the heart of it from Mark Twain onwards, you know, I did feel, therefore, that there's something incredibly valuable about these Best American anthologies because this is the one book that everyone reads. I mean, it goes right on the bestseller list. It stays there. It's as if people want to see what is the best of the best. And one of the benefits it had for me is it taught me about places, magazines like, you know, Tin House, Echotone, all these magazines that I'd never heard of. I mean, I do know about, you know, The Atlantic and McSweeney's and you know, Zoetrope's All Story and things like that. But there were many lesser magazines that I came across the first time.
Now, you said this is an American form largely, but we've had great short stories. Chekhov wrote some pretty great short stories. Mm. In the end, are those the Chekhovs, the Kafkas, the exceptions?
No, I'm not saying that it's an exclusively American form.
Could you do a best Czech collection that would be on this level?
Probably not, I think. But you might be able to do a best English, yeah, because, I mean, there have been great short story writers from Somerset Maugham to V.S. Pritchett to whoever. And I'm frankly now with magazines there like Granta magazine and so on, they are still encouraging the British short story.
Of course, Granta was largely dominated by American editors, so...
That's true. And indeed, one of the best stories in this, and the A.M. Holmes' story, was originally published in Granta's.
Now, just one more thing, because any number of... reviewers have told me they know by the second paragraph whether they should even continue reading a story.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the case here, or did you try to read them all the way through, give them a chance?
I did try, but it is true that, I mean, of the, let's say, 150-ish that I read, there were probably half of those where it was immediately clear that it really was kind of a non-starter. There were probably seven or eight where it was equally immediately clear that there was no way one could leave them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then there were probably 25 to 30 more that were really terrific, and that's when the difficulty arose.
And are you inspired now to go back to the short story form?
Yeah, I'm writing one now.
Good.
That's what I'm doing.
Maybe it'll make next year's collection.
Well, let's see if I'm lucky enough.
Thank you so much for being with us, Salman Rushdie, who's the editor of this year's Best American Short Stories, the annual series. This is the 2008 edition published by Houghton Mifflin.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out the other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This is a free service made available by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.